Press the record button. Go ahead and say hello.
Okay. Hello.
Perfect. Thank you very much. I'll just put it right there. When you're done, I'll come up and get you.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Julie.
Okay. Well, my name is Julie. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Julie.
And, you know, of course, there's no pressure speaking at the OA birthday party. It's like, And, you know, Phil's such a nice guy. I hate to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Phil, are you still here? Oh, yeah, raise your hand. Okay. If I biff this tonight and, you know, don't do a good job, don't come up to me. See Phil. He is the one that asked me. Okay, so, you know, just let's get that out of the way. And also, I just want to say that I'm really, it's an honor and privilege, obviously, to be asked. I hope you all know what you're doing. And I have to say that I am not an OA spokesperson. I am an example, good or bad, that OA works. That's it. I forgot my pictures. I feel bad about that, but you're just going to have to take my word for it that I was fat. And, you know. So I'm going to share, I guess, 15 minutes about what it used to be like. And then you can wave. And 15 minutes, what happened. And then I'll shoot for 15 minutes of what it's like now. So I was, when I first came to Overeaters Anonymous, I read the big book. Well, I only read parts of it. And I read chapter 3 because that's what we read in Southern California. And I read chapter 5 because that's what we read in Southern California. And I pretty much skipped everything else. But then the second time I came back and was told to read the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, because they said it's really the Big Book of Overeaters Anonymous, but we let them keep the name. It says in here, in the very first page, page 1, chapter 1, it says, you know, we landed in England. This is Bill Wilson talking. I visited Westchester Cathedral, much moved. I wandered outside. My attention was caught by a doggerel on an old tombstone. You have to use the dictionary a lot when you read some of this. What the hell's a doggerel? Okay. Here lies a Hampshire grenadier who caught his death drinking small cold beer. A good soldier is never forgot, whether he dieth by musket or by pot. Now, I had to update that to realize that when they say pot, they mean a small pot that people used to drink out of, okay? The part that I identify with is it says, ominous warning I failed to heed. When I was a little kid, my elementary school used to have a fair, and you could buy baked goods and things like that. So I had a piece of cake, what I considered to be a normal piece of cake. And one of my sister's friends walked up to me and looked, and she goes, are you going to eat that whole thing? And I thought, well, what planet are you from? Of course I'm going to eat the whole thing. I didn't say that, but I looked at her like, what? Later she told my sister, who of course told me, said, your little sister's going to get fat. And I just thought, like, that's news. You know, I was, I also want to say couple things. I am going to mention certain foods, not in a romantic, glorifying way, but just because I sit in various meetings and 12-step programs, and, you know, AAs don't say, I drank this gray, bubbly substance. You know, they say, no, I had a beer. You know, I mean, you know what I mean? So it's like, I'm going to say words. But I also want to say that I've been known to have a bit of a mouth, and I know that swear words are for conversational cripples. But sometimes I do walk with a limp. And I see we have a youngster here, and I will certainly try to observe better. But I may request that you put your hands right here over his ears once or twice, because sometimes there are no other words to describe. There you go. Good practice. What you know, certain words can really convey. So, okay, so having given you every warning I could think of, here we go. Well, basically, you know, a lot of you, some of you have heard my story, and you can go ahead and start planning lunch for tomorrow in your head. I would do that. I would sit in OA meetings, and I would recatalog what was in my refrigerator, and then plan menus, and then come to and go, oh, that was how it works, and then go back into my head. You know, so if you're here for any part of the meeting, feel good, you know, because I was out of it. Also, I don't know why that nice lady in the blue coat isn't up here, not me. It's like, you got good local talent here. What the hell? So, I was born a fat baby. I'm not kidding you. 9 pounds, 6 ounces in 1956 was not small. And I got fatter from there. As it turns out, you know, my sister, my mother had trouble getting her to eat, not me. And, you know, the pediatrician actually bawled her out because she's like, you know, he's like, look what you're doing to this kid. And, she just likes to eat. Well, yeah, you know, and it just got worse from there, okay? So I'm already under the gun. I have pictures of me. I was an obese baby. I mean, I was an obese baby, okay? And then, you know, you get legs, you wander around. I got a little thinner. But my first diet was at the age of 5, you know, because my family knew that one of several diseases that run in my family is compulsive eating, okay? Only their cure for it was shame, right? I'm going to shame you into recovery. Okay, so anyway, I'm on a diet at the age of 5, and from the age of 5 and early on, you know, I did what, you know, dieters do. We basically had skinless chicken breasts that were broiled, so, you know, you could have used them for shoe leather. And in those days, there was no NutraSweet or any of these other nice little diet sweeteners they have now. There was nothing. So it was Tab and Fresca without the NutraSweet. Hello. You know, you really wanted to lose weight if you were willing to drink that, you know what. It was basically like carbonated horse pee. So that's what we're drinking. That's what we're eating. Oh, yeah, my aunt used to drink this stuff called Metrical or Seago. Yeah. Which was also nasty. Okay, but, you know, you'd lose some weight. And then the best part about being on a diet was getting off the diet. You know, oh, I'm thin now. I lost 2 pounds. So that was my thought. You know, aren't I felt and wonderful. Now I can actually eat again. So, and I didn't start eating vegetables until I came to, well, I might have got an accidental piece of lettuce now and then, but basically I didn't eat vegetables until I came to Overeaters Anonymous. My idea of a vegetable was there's corn in corn chips, there's potatoes in potato chips. If they grow in the ground, they're a vegetable, okay? The occasional carrot stick or anything else. But that's the only thing that never went. The only thing that went bad in our house was vegetables. Everything else, man. I'm not kidding you. Till I came to Overeaters Anonymous, our garbage disposal was in pristine condition. Like never been used condition. Okay? Because we had Tupperware, but who put things in Tupperware? You know, you just ate it off the rest of what was there in the pan, and that way you didn't have to put anything away. And, so, you know, this is what's normal to me. If you ask a fish, what do you think about all this water? They're going to go, what water? You know, it was even the dog was diabetic. We used to, everybody had ice cream after dinner. And even our dog, you know, the vet calls us out because the dog's obese, you know. Well, the dog liked ice cream. What can I say? It was shocking me to find out that, you know, if you've ever made cookies from the back of one of those little, you know, yellow packets with the chips in them. It says it makes 4 dozen. Believe it or not, it really does. Now, in my house, it made about 2. And eventually, it made none. You know, I used to keep bowls of cookie dough under my bed. I assume some of you did, too. Whole German chocolate cakes in my closet for, you know, quick energy value. And, like I say, I mean, you know, I was, for years, I mean, it's a wonder I ever went to the bathroom because I didn't have any roughage in my diet. It was basically a peanut butter sandwich, Fritos, and a ding-dong. That's what I ate in elementary school. Oh, I may have thrown in a bologna sandwich or two now and again, but that was it. You know, no big deal. Okay? So I'm a fat kid. I'm going through school, and the nurse, you know, we would have in the 60s, they would weigh you at the front of the room and then call your weight out to the nurse in the back of the room, right? You know, and I'm in a cafeteria with all these, you know, little thin people, and they're like, you know, nothing against you anorexics, don't get me wrong, but you know, the normal thin people, you know, and they have apples in their lunch, so you know, their moms obviously didn't love them. So anyway, they're all talking about, I've got to go on a diet, and I'm just thinking, what the hell for? You know, you look thin to me. Well, you know, I have always felt like a square peg in a round hole. I have always wondered, how did all the other kids get the memo and not me? Like, I see a lot of purple here tonight. Why was I not told? You know, even the flyers here, I mean, yeah, everybody's purple, you know? So I never got it. Like, why don't I get it, you know? And so, you know, they'd weigh me, and the nurse would always say, you know, they'd bend down and look you in the eyes and go, honey, don't you think you should lose a little weight? And I'd think, yeah, I guess so. I don't know. I mean, I was normal in my family, you know. The only time I knew I wasn't normal, or my family might not have been normal, was when I forgot my lunch and my mom brought it to school, and one of the kids in my class looks out the window, sees my mom walking up to the office and goes, who's that fat lady? And I thought, that's not a fat lady, that's my mom. She wasn't fat to me, you know? So that's when I got my first inkling that, you know, maybe, anyway, so elementary school, you know, you just keep hanging on for an older time. You know, it's like, I'm not popular. What a surprise. I'm not athletic. But I did do pretty good at Foursquare. Okay, so enough of what it used to be like. So that was my academic achievement. So now we move on, you know. And I'm getting older and the weight's getting worse, okay? I had one brief shining period. I don't know if you guys have ever had a growth spurt where, like, for one summer I could eat and not gain weight. For one glorious golden summer. After that, it was all over. When I went to go back to school in the seventh grade, you know, right when you're noticing boys, you get acne, greasy hair, and a period. Gee, that's swell. You know, and so it's like, you know, all these hormones are sloshing around. And on top of that, I had this big weight gain, you know, because, you know, my body's changing. And I remember my mom dragging me in on the bathroom scale. And I don't know if you guys learned to do this, but I learned to run away from home without going anywhere. So while she's yelling at me and calling me fat and saying all, you know, again, shame you into recovery, she's saying this stuff. I'm inside going, I am never going to let anybody do this to me again. I'll fix this problem. I'll fix it. And so I put myself on my own diet, which was don't eat anything all day and eat peanut butter sandwiches at night. And it actually worked. Crazy diets work for a limited amount of time, but they do work. Okay? And then I would gain all the weight back. There's a trend that starts here. I gain all the weight back and maybe a little more. And then I put myself on the next weird diet and then I lose all that weight and then I gain a little more. And it didn't get really bad till there was a people when I first came into OA, you know, I was looking for magic. I would have given a body part if I could have just been thin the rest of my life. Like, sure, I've got two arms, you can have one. Just, I'd like to be thin, please. In other words, what I'm saying is I'd like to be able to eat anything I want and not gain weight. That's my goal here. Or I'd like God to have me wake up and be thin. Either one's fine with me. And OA didn't show me either of those two things, and neither did God, which also gave me a few problems with the higher power. You know, I prayed for this a lot. It didn't happen. What gives? So I come to Overeaters Anonymous. And, okay, now senior moment, got derailed. Let me tell you about a couple of diet programs I was on real quick. I also tried a commercial weight loss program that worked so well I did it 5 times. One time I lost all my weight, I maintained it for a full 24 hours, and then began gaining it all back again because all that changed was the outside. These things were important for me to do. It was important for me to F up and try everything I could try so that by the time I got to OA, I was out of bright ideas. That's a good thing. If you're in here tonight and you're really desperate and you feel like crap, well, welcome to Overeaters Anonymous. You know, there's hope here. There really is. I should say that because I've been abstaining by the, you know, grace of a higher power in this program and the help of the fellowship for 28 years. Yeah. And my top weight was 200 pounds. And my bottom weight was 98 pounds. And for the first time in my life, I weigh less than my driver's license picture. Okay? So I tried a lot of stuff. I even went to this SHIC program, right, for smoking, right? And they had one for weight loss, where they electroshock your arm and try and convince you you don't like certain foods, right? Well, they said, give us a list of foods that you want to stop eating. And I handed it to them. They go, well, that's everything. And I'm like, so we started with the easy one, chocolate. It did not take me long to break through that therapy. So I paid basically $400 to lose like 4 pounds. That was a good investment. And I used to get all kinds of diet books and read them. And I remember this one diet book is this woman's diet thing, right? And in the book, I remember reading a sentence that said, of course, if you are, and then they described me, they said, this might not work for you. And I thought, oh, damn it. But she used to do things like say, she had this therapist person had pictures in their office of like a hoagie sandwich with like a dead pigeon in the middle of it, or like cookies covered in ice, you know, and ants and bugs and stuff. And she said, I just visualize that and I don't eat. And I think, I would pick the pigeon off the sandwich, pull off whatever feathers were left. I might even cut off a little bit of the bread, and I could eat that sucker anyway. Case in point. My sister gave me a dessert, a chocolate dessert she made, cake, and we used to get ants every summer in our house. Okay, you guys get it hot out here, the ants come in, they want to be cool, all right, but they went for the cake. Well, yeah, those are fighting words. So I get this cake and it's crawling with ants. I thought, damn it, the freezer. So I froze those little sons of guns in there. And I thought when they quit moving, it'll be easier to pick them off, right? So I freeze them. Later, get the cake out. Pick off what I can see. Figure it's a chocolate cake. Ants are chocolate covered looking, you know. And I fear in many countries, insects are a protein. So c'est la vie, you know. So that kind of stuff doesn't bother me. I have a friend in the East Bay that says, the floor is just basically a larger serving surface. If I drop it, it's still mine, okay? Unless it's on dirt or it lands in dog poo, it's still mine. Especially, and now this is hysterical. I go with another overeater to a restaurant, right? And we both have the salad with chicken on top. What is it? They just have called OA special. So anyway, dressing on the side. So I get this salad, and one of my big chunks of chicken falls on the floor, which almost never happens to me, by the way. And we're looking at each other, and I'm thinking, do I know her well enough to pick it up? I'll pretend like I'm going to throw it away. I picked it up, and I put surreptitiously in it. She goes, I'm so sorry that happened. I don't need to. I think I put it back on my plate when she wasn't looking. I'm almost positive I did. Because it was a carpet, for God's sake. You know. And I didn't know you're supposed to throw food away when it falls on the floor, except I worked in an office where some lady, it was a law office, and she dropped a pretzel on the carpet. She walked over, picked it up, and threw it in the trash. And I wanted to go, really? It's perfectly good. You know. But I used, last story, walking in downtown San Francisco. I'm working in a job in the Pacific area, and this is downtown San Francisco. On the sidewalk, I find a complete, unopened, whole Butterfinger. That was it, Butterfinger. And I thought, who would drop an entire candy bar and not miss this? So I picked it up. It's perfectly good, unopened, completely intact. Now, I'm not going to eat it because I'm in OA. But my husband can eat it. So I brought it home for him. And he's sitting there watching TV. I go, hi, honey, would you like a Butterfinger? And he goes, well, why'd you get me that? I said, well, actually, I found it on the street in San Francisco. But it's unopened and perfectly good. And he looks at me and he goes, throw it away. And I'm like, it's perfectly good. Yeah, oh, all right, boom. You know, but I thought, I don't know. I just have to keep saying this stuff because it just never ceases to amaze me on this planet how these earth people eat. You know, I'm eating with a friend who's a compulsive overeater, right? And her husband is like, you know, skinny as a rail. He gets a piece of cake, he scrapes off the frosting, and then eats it. And I'm just thinking, that's just wrong.
Yeah.
That's just disrespectful. You don't do that. You just don't do that, unless you're going to eat it all later, saving it for that last hit when you're done. So this is the mindset I'm working with, okay? You know, go to the wedding, pray for the corner piece with the rose. Never get it, but always hoping, okay? So this is the kind of stuff I'm saying because when I came to Overeaters Anonymous, and what it says here in the book, it says, little or nothing can be done till an understanding is reached. In other words, I have to know you know what you're talking about. I've had bosses, I've had boyfriends, I've had relatives, I've had doctors tell me I need to lose weight. Not one of them has said to me, I know how you feel. I've done that too. And here's how you stop. Nobody said that. Nobody. They just said, you need to lose weight. It's like, well, no S, Sherlock. Yeah. You know. I have been called in on the carpet for my weight. You know, we talk about, well, some people in meetings intimate that they are better than the alcoholic because they didn't go to jail. I know a gal in Orange County who had to take a field sobriety test. She was not drinking alcohol. All she'd done is eat sugar all day. Okay? No, I don't endanger lives. I just was driving in my car on the freeway in rain so bad I was hydroplaning. And while I was doing that, I wanted to finish eating my binge before I picked up my husband. So I am putting cream cheese on a bagel. You'll notice two hands are occupied with the bagel and the cream cheese. Nobody's got their hand on the wheel, and it's a stick shift. So, but I'm okay. I'm just a compulsive overeater. Right. I've come close to losing jobs because of this kind of stuff. The reason why I'm telling you these things is together we can laugh about stuff we used to cry about alone. I would never tell anybody any of this before I got here. You know, but you guys, in fact, you guys don't even blink. I'll say, I put on 100 pounds in less than 3 months. And everyone's like going, so? I did that in a week. And that's, you know, that's who we are. You know, but the thing that makes me a compulsive overeater, and it says in this book, our book, in chapter 3, that the first step in recovery is not I admit I'm powerless over food. It's that I admit I'm a compulsive eater. That's the first step in recovery. Until I identify with you, ain't going to happen. It just ain't going to happen. And I have to be desperate. And I was both of those things when I got to Overeaters Anonymous. Okay, I tried all I could think of to try. I knew AIDS wouldn't work. I mean, really? Candy to help you lose weight? I even knew that one. Even I knew that wouldn't work, okay? And for our bulimic friends, I had been eating chocolate-flavored X-Lax, which I thought, that's a good combination right there, chocolate and X-Lax. You know, and that really wasn't working. And I'm sorry to say I can't throw up unless I'm deathly ill, so that wasn't working. And I knew wiring my jaw wouldn't work because I'd heard of a guy that did that and then knocked his two front teeth out so he could put the straw in for the shake. I knew that wouldn't work. I had a feeling there weren't enough staples you could put in my ear for that to work. And they hadn't invented all the different procedures they have now. which I have no opinion on, but at that time, had they had them, I would have done them, okay? So there was no, I mean, Jenny Craig was still in Australia. There was nothing but Overeaters Anonymous, and it doesn't even have a cute name, Overeaters Anonymous. Don't you picture like a bear bulb, you know, and people sitting at tables? Grim, you know, and so I come in and everybody's laughing and happy, and I thought, what the hell? And I was also really grateful to see they weren't going to weigh me in. I had been weighed in enough, you know. Most of us have. I'm one of those people that has like Detecto permanently imprinted on the bottom of my feet from stepping on a scale so much. So I come to Overeaters Anonymous the first time because I'd been to Africa, I'd lost weight because of dysentery and the Sahara Desert. There aren't a lot of McDonald's out there. And so I knew it was only a matter of time before I gained it all back. And I thought, this time I'm going to head it off at the pass. You know, I tried Overeaters Anonymous. And I did okay up until dinner. I'm eating, okay, well, hello, 4 ounces of chicken, a cup of carrots, and a cup of grapes at noon, and it's 7 o'clock and we're still not serving dinner? I'm sorry, but you know, they're playing with their lives. I mean, I wanted to grab the hostess. I'm pretty sure I came close to this. I know flames were coming out my eyes. And I said, can I help you put the potluck on the table? And she said, oh, sure. This is where I learned, don't eat with drinkers. When people are drinking, they are not hungry. I, on the other hand, last ate 4 ounces of chicken, warm carrot sticks, and warm grapes at noon. It's 7 o'clock. So we put everything out, and I fixed myself an abstinent dinner once. And then I fixed myself another abstinent dinner twice. And for good measure, I went through the third time and had a third abstinent dinner, but was feeling okay because I hadn't eaten sugar. So we go to this party we were all going to go to, and I didn't have any sugar punch, so I felt really good about that. I came home back to her house to get a plate. Now, this is a strange person's house. I've never been in her house before. But she left the front door open so we could get our dish. Coming up on 15?
Yeah.
Okay. So we could get our dish.
15 to change subject?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, I didn't know.
Okay, that's all right. I'll hurry through. No problem. Yeah. Anyway... So I go to get the dish and her dog, the little dog growling at me, you know, because I'm there, I got my dish, but I'm helping myself to food in this strange person's refrigerator at, oh, I don't know, midnight. And because I'm getting some cheese for the road, you know. And the next day it occurs to me to call somebody, and I said, did I break my abstinence? And she said, I'm afraid you did. She didn't say that. She goes, yes, you did. And I said, thank you very much. I hung up. I promptly went to the grocery store and I put on 72 pounds. And I came back here a year later and I was pretty demoralized and I was pretty done. And I didn't have good hygiene. I don't have great hygiene now, but I was worse then. I just didn't shower. I didn't want to look at my body. I didn't want to see anything except for the neck up. And that's where I just applied makeup. I never took it off. I just kept applying it like Queen Elizabeth. And, you know, you fall asleep, and then the next morning you have, you know. So I have dirty hair stuffed up under a hat. I'm wearing a pair of drawstring painter's pants because that's all that'll fit. And I'm crying. I'm just looking at tears hitting the tops of my shoes because I'm demoralized. And I don't know where to go, and I don't know what to do. And I see the same people that were here a year ago, and I'm thinking, I thought you got this and left. I mean, what are they still here for? And, of course, they were still maintaining their weight loss, because they were still here. So I kept coming back because I didn't know what else to do. And I would judge people. I saw a real skinny lady stand up here and I thought, what the hell's that skinny, you fill in the blank, doing at an OA meeting? And then she said, well, I've lost 100 pounds and kept it off for 5 years. And I thought, okay, you have my attention. I saw another gal one time who was 350 and I thought, she's the speaker. And then she said, I'm down from 650. And I went, you have my attention, and you have taught me a valuable lesson. So I lost weight that time, and I started working the steps. And, you know, this isn't English, but I couldn't quite figure out the fourth step. And my sponsor hadn't done the four step, and most people I knew in the meetings I was going to hadn't done a four step. And then when I went to meetings where people had done a four step, I still couldn't figure it out. So I just thought I need to get thin. So I went from about 170 to 98 pounds, and I was abstaining a year and a half, and I had no effective mental defense against that first compulsive bite. I hadn't trusted God. I didn't trust God. I wasn't cleaning house. And the reason why I didn't trust God is because my dad got cancer. I had prayed to God, please heal him. God didn't do it. He died on Christmas morning. I thought that was really crappy on God's part. So I just slammed the door on God. And then all of a sudden, here I am in OA. God, if you'll notice, is in a couple of the steps. And I thought, oh, I have to deal with it. It shows you how desperate I was. I was willing to say the Lord's Prayer at the end of a meeting. I thought, I don't care. If holding hands and saying the Lord's Prayer will help me lose weight, I will do that. And so I did that. But I didn't do the things you need to do. So I began compulsively overeating at an OA retreat. They lock up the food between meals at OA retreats. I checked. So I... And I was miserable eating, and I was miserable not eating, and I said, I might as well eat, and I did. I said at an OA meeting, nobody ran up to me and said, don't do it. And I did. And I went from 98 to 200 in less than 3 months. And I did that during June, July, and August, and you know what it's like up here? Well, it's like that down in Southern California, too. I was working in an amusement park, and I was wearing a size 4 uniform. By the end of the week, I was wearing an 8. By the end of 2 weeks, I had skipped 10 and was going right to the 14s. And by the time I was done, I could not zip the back up. So I had to wear a black sweater in the summertime on top of this uniform because I couldn't get the back zipped up. And I got called in the office because I wasn't quite portraying the image that they wanted me to, because I was 100 pounds. So I kept coming back to Obey Genomics because it was the only time I would stop eating. And eventually I found a sponsor who was 6 months out of a mental unit. We were perfect together. And she helped me abstain that first Thanksgiving after breaking my abstinence. I recommend it if you're having trouble abstaining, eat meals with your sponsor, sitting directly across the table from you. You will find it difficult to overeat. She enabled me to have an abstinent Thanksgiving, her and Rod Serling. You know, I'm right there in the Twilight Zone with Rod, trying to abstain. And so for the next 2.5 years, I'd eat and not eat and eat and not eat. And I'm going to OA meetings, and I had enough 30-day chips to surround this room. And I can't tell you why I got abstinent. I can just tell you I kept coming back to meetings. And I was so ashamed to go to an OA meeting, I went to an AA meeting. And somebody said something there that just shocked me. I know what we say to ourselves, and I think everybody else is thinking that too, even in OA. And I just want to tell you, if you're eating and you hate yourself and you think everybody else is talking about you, we're not. We're not. We have concern, we have love, we have caring, but we're not judging you. Because we all live in a glass house. And we all know this is a progressive illness that gets worse, never better. And I don't think I'm immune because I have 28 years. And she just told me, she led me to believe that I was okay. And maybe worth saving. I don't know. But so the next day, it's not, oh God, because you know, you can only say, God, help me to abstain, and I eat again. God, help me to abstain, and I eat again. And after the 150,000th time of doing that, God starts to have a bit of a credibility issue with me. So finally, you know, I just said, if there's anything out there that can help. And it wasn't tiptoe through the tulips. It was every cell in my body was screaming to eat. And I would just make it from meal to meal to a meeting to home. I went to bed one time at 6 o'clock just to shut this up. I would go to meetings. I had a bad attitude. Surprise, surprise. And, you know, people wouldn't sit by me in meetings. What a surprise. Because I'd get up there and chair. You know, you quit eating and you discover a little emotion called anger. And it's like, it's been in there for a long time. It's been multiplying, you know, and discovered what resentments. Oh, yeah. So let me say this in the remaining 10 minutes, and I'm sorry to have taken so long. I messed up on the timing. But the thing that makes me different than a normal eater, and the reason why I'm harping on this is because it's covered in 3, maybe 4, maybe 5 chapters in the big book. I think it's important is this. Being fat or being anorexic or throwing up does not make me a compulsive eater. What makes me a compulsive eater is my threefold illness, emotional, physical, and spiritual. And what happens in my brain is this. When somebody comes to the doctor with a rash, and they're itching and they've got hives and everything, the doctor does a skin prick test and says, oh, you're allergic to mayonnaise. Okay. So if I eat mayonnaise, all this happens? Yep. One shot. 30 years later. Give me a BLT. Hold the mayo. Never eat mayonnaise again. Now they have an allergy, but not the obsession, not the compulsion. Okay? Now, they told me, okay, you know, don't eat certain foods. You'll lose weight. Okay. And then I'm like the guy who's pounding on the bar after the fourth or fifth going, how did I ever get started again? I have literally watched myself as if from a video camera get up, go over, get a bag of chips, get a soda, sit down and begin eating as if I were watching another human being. I am without effective mental defense against that first compulsive bite, and that's the bite that sets the whole thing going. That's the bite. One is too many, 1,000 isn't enough. It's not the caboose that kills you if you're standing on the railroad tracks. It's the engine. It's the first one. That's what smashes us to death. How do I keep from doing that? Well, that's what this book is about. That's what this program is about. It gives me a power greater than myself, which will solve my problem. How does that happen? Through the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. What have I done? I got a sponsor, by the grace of God, a really good one. She took me through the 12 steps. She told me, you be of service, you work with others, and it says in here over and over again, working with a newcomer works when all other measures fail, and we will hit low spots. Life is still life, you know, and it hands us some pretty raw deals. But this way of life has enabled me to make it through relatives dying, my husband having cancer, going back to graduate school, my mother's Alzheimer's, which she stayed with us for 5.5 years. Okay? And I didn't have to compulsively overeat over any of that. Any of it. What this program... How much time?
Seven minutes.
7 minutes, okay. It's hard to tell you. It's like, I don't do this thing perfectly, folks. It hasn't been like a NASA rocket launch, ever upward, better, you know. Hell, I flipped somebody off twice just today. And I haven't done that in years. One of them deserved it. One of them did not. You know, I've gone from stealing thousands of dollars to having to pay for pens and pencils now when I take them from my employer, sort of by accident, not really. I've been able to stay married to the same man for almost 25 years and not mess around. And I looked at men like I looked at food. More is better. And you always want to have an extra supply away, stashed away somewhere. So I have not had to do that. I'm actually driving the speed limit today. Now, I just started that this week, but I'm doing better. It's enabled me to stop smoking. My life hasn't been perfect. I made amends to my sister. It's been well over 14 years, and she still isn't speaking to me. I can't do anything about that. There are some things that just I kind of accept and keep praying. And that's been the biggest thing for me, has what Overeaters Anonymous has given me is a power greater than myself, which has solved my problem. And anybody can have that. Anybody. Okay? And one of the things that's helped me has been sponsorship. It's good I don't have a gun in my house. I don't have, well, I have some sharp knives. There have been some considerations. But most of the time, when I'm telling a sponsee something, it's something I need to hear. It really is. So, and the long and short of it is there is this, there's this prayer I like, and I can't remember it. But I'll tell you the parts I do remember, which is, it says, nothing was more practical than falling in love with God or Overeaters Anonymous, which is a power greater than myself, in a quiet, final, and absolute way. What you fall in love with will determine what gets you out of bed in the morning, what you do with your days, how you spend your evenings, what brings tears to your eyes, and what fills you with joy. Fall in love, stay in love, and it will determine everything. I didn't fall in love with Overeaters Anonymous at first sight, but what's happened over time is it has transformed me, not into a different Julie, but into the Julie I believe I was meant to be. I would like to be a lot more different than I currently am. I think some of this is just permanent, and some of it's like, you know, tartar on your teeth. You have to keep going in and scraping it off, right? Defects of character, and just basically not a real nice person, but I fake it well. People at work actually trust me with some stuff, okay? And what I'm grateful about is this program has taken my eyes from when do I get mine to how do I help you with yours, okay? I'm working in a job that I really like. It's highly stressful, but I really like it. Not the stress part, but the people I work with. They're disabled adults. They have problems living life. So do I. They have problems with their medication. I had problems with my medication. But a day at a time, I get to get out of myself. And I'll just end with this. And it's a prayer I like. And if you don't like it, well, don't listen to the tape. It's just real simple. Dear higher power, I have no idea where I'm going. I do not see the road ahead of me, and I cannot know for certain where it will end. Nor do I really know myself. And the fact that I think I'm doing your will does not mean that I'm actually doing so. But I believe this. I believe that the desire to please you does in fact please you, and I hope I have that desire in all that I do. And I pray that I never do anything apart from that desire. And I believe that if I do this, you will lead me by the right road, though I may know nothing about it at the time. Therefore, I will trust you always, for though I may seek to be lost and in the shadow of death, I will not be afraid, because I know you will never leave me to face my troubles all alone. Overeaters Anonymous and the people in it, when I reach out for help, have not left me to face one trouble alone. You have helped me through some really, really hard times. And some really good times, too. You know. But a day at a time, that's all this is. It's just for today. It's just for today. And I think that's about all I have to share, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm free.
Wow, that was awesome.
That was awesome.
Julie, could you come back here?